So welcome to this discussion on what a single mom needs to know when drafting in a will. Now, in preparation for this conversation, we reached out to single mothers and we asked them, what was their major concern when it came to writing up a will? And I suppose probably not surprisingly, many mothers are worried about what will happen to their child after they're gone, who will manage the money on behalf of their child, and whether or not they have enough to cover their child's education and living costs. So to join me in this discussion is Denisha Nadesan of Capital Legacy. Denisha, I'm going to start off actually with my question, which is what actually happens when a single mom dies without a will? You know, what happens to the child? Where do the funds go?
I'll break that question up into two parts. Let's just talk about not having a will and what happens to the distribution of your estate. What happens in the absence of a will is that we have to return back to the law and what the law says with regards to distribution of your estate. We've got in our law something called the Interstate Succession Act that determines who will be your beneficiaries and what portions will they inherit from your estate. Then with regards to the second part of your question, with regards to your children and what happens to those funds, in an interstate world, any cash given to a child from an estate will be managed by the Master's Office Guardians Fund. So that cash is not in control of the actual child, but by the Master of the High Court.
Okay, I just want to just clarify here. I'll say it. I know you can't say it, but this is run by government.
Correct.
Okay, so a lot of admin issues, this is probably not something you want your child's money to end up in.
Yeah, correct. I mean, speaking to some of the guardians that had to go through this process, unfortunately, it's not the easiest process and probably not what you want to go through when you've just lost somebody.
Mm. So, Denisha, I want to also understand a little bit about what goes into your will and what is excluded from your will in terms of assets. And I'm thinking about things like your retirement funds and your life cover.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so your will primarily deals with assets that you own. We can divide it into four sections. I think it'll be easier like that. You've got immovable assets, which, you know, land, your holiday home, the family home. We've got movable assets, the things that you can actually move around, your vehicle, your jewelry, those kind of things. Then cash, as we know, cash. And the last thing is any claims in favor of your estate, maybe a loan in your favor. Those are the type of assets that are included in your estate.
And investments. So if I have a tax-free savings account, if I have endowments,
Absolutely.
Any of those things.
Yeah. That's considered cash in an estate. Mm. Then you spoke about life cover. If there is a nomination on the life cover from a beneficiary perspective, that beneficiary will receive the life cover benefits directly, and that does not form part of your estate. Then the third thing that you need to consider are your retirement funds. Retirement funds are administered by trustees of the funds and not by the executors of the estate. The trustees of the fund will make a decision with regards to who gets to benefit from those retirement funds. They are not bound by things like the will or a nomination form, and they will look at what's fair and equitable for your legal and your financial dependents. The other thing to remember is that these funds have up to 12 months to make a decision on who gets to benefit from those retirement funds.
I want to take you back a step to that life cover because I think it's very important. So now perhaps I'm a single mom and I want to make sure my child has sufficient funds for their education. So I take out a life cover policy. Should I put my child as the beneficiary of that life policy, or is there a better way of doing that?
In practice, what happens if you do put a minor as a beneficiary of that life cover? The minor will receive that money into their bank account.
Even if they're 5 years old?
Even if they're 5 years old. The insurance house will call for a bank account that belongs to the child and pay into it. I highly recommend that you consider something else and not let a five-year-old have your life cover proceeds.
Of course, it's not just a five-year-old. I mean, there's a couple of scenarios here. Yeah. The five-year-old, well, family members and friends and whatnot.
Absolutely.
But of course, if it's a 16-year-old, they may just think, wow, my time has come. So absolutely.
100%. Yeah. Anyone that's under 18, I strongly recommend that you consider making a testamentary trust a beneficiary or testamentary trust to be set up for your child. To be the beneficiary of that life cover. Because then you've got some protection mechanisms, because you spoke about five-year-olds plus other people that may influence them or have access to that account. So to safeguard that, I would recommend that you consider a testamentary trust be set up for your minor kids.
And what about the retirement benefits? So could you on your, so you obviously you're going to nominate your child as a beneficiary of your retirement fund. Could you specify that you want those funds to go to a testamentary trust, or what? How much discretion do the trustees have in that regard?
Yeah, so the trustees will look at a number of considerations before making a final determination on where that beneficiary fund money or the retirement money needs to be paid. They'll look at the child, the living circumstances, who are the guardians. Generally, wills do have clauses which motivates for the trustees of the fund to pay into a testamentary trust for the benefit of the child.
So although your retirement fund isn't dictated by your will, so in your will you can't say, you know,
X, I direct Y, that.
I direct that. Yep. You can't say that, but you can put
A motivation
into your will. So that's very important. So if you do create a testamentary trust, and we'll get into that a little bit later, then you can say, I motivate for the funds to go into the testamentary trust. But at the end of the day, it's actually the option of, it's up to the trustee to decide. So Denisha, we've spoken about life cover and retirement funds that don't fall into your will. But of course, one of the big things that does fall into your will is property. And for many people outside of their retirement funds, that is their biggest asset, let's be honest. So we had a question from one of the moms of a 12-year-old, and she asked, can I leave my property to my daughter, or can it be transferred to her name if something happens to me?
So minors can inherit property, and the property can be registered on their name. However, you must remember that minors have limited contractual capacity. That means if the minor wants to deal with the property, they will still need consent from the master of the High Court if they want to sell the property, rent the property, or mortgage the property. An alternative to achieve the same result, again, is to put it into a testamentary trust where this property can be managed by skilled trustees for the benefit of the child. And the thing about a testamentary trust is you can decide on the termination age of the testamentary trust. So the trustees will take care of the property, call it till 18 years, and on your child's 18th birthday, the property can be transferred into his or her own name, and him or her can deal with it on their own.
Denisha, I have a question a little bit around property, because what I do find is that as women, we consider our homes really important to us. So the idea of leaving my home to my daughter so that she's got somewhere safe is a very emotional
decision.
But is it a good financial decision? And I'm just thinking, here's this child, there's this property, it has rates, it has taxes, it has levies. You would really need to make sure that you've left sufficient liquidity to allow that child to be in that property. What would your advice be? I mean, do you think you should rather say sell the property and invest the proceeds, or kind of what is your feeling around that? What do you see in practice?
So what we've seen in practice is wills become emotional decisions. And like you said, I want my daughter to have the family home. She's grown up in this home. Let us still have this, some sort of stability. But in reality, if you only leave your home to a child and no life cover to support her for her day-to-day finances, it's going to become a massive problem. And then your executors, if at that stage, or your trustees, will have to make a tough call on whether to liquidate that asset. And really, that's not a nice conversation to have, you know, because the truth is, you still need to maintain the property, you've got to insure the property, someone's got to come and cut the grass every Sunday. Liquidity needs are something serious and sometimes overlooked.
And Denisha, this discussion about needing liquidity, I think is really important. And it's, again, one of the big concerns we got from the moms was, how much is enough? How do I provide enough liquidity for my child? And one mum asked, how do I know that my insurance policy is sufficient? And how do I make sure that the policy I have is the right one? Now, I know you're not a financial advisor, so maybe you can talk a little bit more from the liquidity of winding up the estate, and maybe I can add a few comments in after that about the rest.
So what we've seen in practice is there's typical life cover, and life cover needs to ensure that all your responsibilities upon death is taken care of. Okay, so the bank's not going to wait for the executor to make a plan on the bond or for a surviving spouse or someone to come in and save the day. They're going to call for that bond to be settled. And there's other liabilities that you need to settle upon your death. There's also some income protection that you can take, some education policies to make sure your kids can still be in school. It can replace the income that you used to provide. What I've seen in practice is at least 55% of our estates struggle to be finalized because of the cash needs in the estate.
55%. So when you say the cash needs, they need to wind up all of these things. There's a cost to it. There's settling bonds.
That's it. And sometimes when you sit with a financial advisor, we're looking at all of these big things. Okay, it's the bond. Okay, X amount of education. One of the things overlooked is estate-related costs. Executor fees are 3.5% of the value of the assets of your estate. If you set up a testamentary trust for your child, you've got a setup cost and an ongoing management cost. You use the example of a 12-year-old little girl. That testamentary trust needs to run for many, many years, and there's costs involved in that. Not only that, we spoke about property. There's conveyance costs to move the property from your name to your beneficiaries' names. So there's a number of costs that's generally overlooked, and you shouldn't be using life cover to settle estate fees. You should be looking at other alternatives to settle estate fees because life cover is there for your family.
So there you could take an insurance specifically for winding up those costs.
100%.
Yeah. So that's a very important point, is separating out the living expenses and education costs from the actual winding up of estates. I tell you, when you get lawyers involved, Tanisha, sorry, I know you're a lawyer, but boy, does it get very, very expensive. And I think what's also for me really important is to look at company benefits. So when you're looking at that overall picture of how much can I leave my child, also ask your company, you know, understand, does your company have life cover? How much is it? And I do have to say to all those single moms out there, not touching your retirement benefits and not cashing out with Two-Pot is really valuable for your child, because if something happens to you, then at least your retirement funds have built up sufficiently as well. And that's just another way to make sure that your child's taken care of. So I just wanted to add that little bit in, Tanisha, because I think sometimes people forget about their benefits at their Correct. At their employer. Tanisha, I want to get on to a little bit of a sensitive topic that actually came up, probably the biggest question that came out of when I went onto my platforms and I was speaking to single moms. There's a reason they're single moms, right? I mean, obviously in some cases the father's passed away, but in many of the cases they are estranged from the father. And there may be a father who's been abusive, he's an alcoholic or a drug addict, and they're really, really worried. One of them has said to me, you know, I have life cover to ensure that my little one will be secure financially when I'm no longer there, but I'm concerned that her father will automatically be her guardian as her biological father and have access to her funds. What is the best way to ensure that her funds are not mismanaged?
Yeah, on point there. That's exactly what will happen. A biological father will be the natural guardian of that minor, and he has rights to the minor and access to the minor's assets. Again, if she does make the minor a beneficiary of that life cover, going back to the story we were talking about earlier with the 5-year-old being nominated, the exact same thing is going to happen. She will not be able to prevent that. Again, rather consider leaving it to your testamentary trust, where the money will be protected against people who may not be financially responsible.
I want to ask you a little bit about retirement funds in that case, because I know trustees obviously have discretion. They can say who's going to manage those funds on behalf of the minor. And one of the options they do have is to place the money into a beneficiary fund. How does that work?
So beneficiary funds are set up specifically to receive pension funds. When a member of a pension fund passes away, the trustees of that fund use their discretion in terms of where to pay the benefits for that minor. And the other thing to remember is beneficiary funds are only for minors, that means under 18 years old. Okay, they have a few options. Some trustees prefer to pay the guardian directly. if the employer group is linked with a beneficiary fund, they can make a decision to pay into the fund, which will manage the asset for the beneficiary, the cash for the beneficiary, until the beneficiary is 18 years old and it's got some protection in that beneficiary fund. Or they can consider the will of the member who has passed away, and if there is a motivation in the will, to pay into the testamentary trust for the benefit of that child.
And in terms of the beneficiary fund, they would then determine how much income the child needs every month to, you know, for living costs and all of that sort of thing. So it is that the child receives an income from that beneficiary fund as they would from a testamentary trust. So these are just really different forms of protection that can be given.
Yeah, there's a few things. There's certain tax consequences, etc., where beneficiary funds are different to testamentary trusts. Mm. Testamentary trusts are set up in terms of your will, and beneficiary funds are a nomination or a membership that happens by the person that has passed away when he is part of any employer group or part of a pension fund. So it is actually quite different, but I think the spirit of which both those funds are run are still the same in terms of protecting funds that belong to a minor.
And in terms of the testamentary trust, we keep talking about it, but I think we may need to just explain to the listeners that how it's set up. It is in the will and it only comes into effect on your death.
Correct.
Am I right?
Okay. Yeah. So you can't set up a testamentary trust in any other way except if you set it up in terms of your will. Your will states who will be the trustees, so you nominate your trustees in your will. You can have a professional trustee together with someone that you know, love, and trust. In lots of situations, we've seen the deceased sister or brother also being appointed as a co-executor to support the professional executors. The will becomes the trust deed, and that's very important. What that does is that it gives or it sets the rules of play for the trustees. The trustees cannot do whatever it is they feel that they need to do. They've got certain fiduciary duties that they need to uphold, and this is set out in the will that becomes the actual trust document.
Mm. So Denisha, one of the questions, and we've spoken now about, how do I protect my assets from perhaps a father that I don't trust with the money. But this really brings us to guardianship. And again, guardianship has come up as a very strong question. I mean, I'm a single mom, I'm leaving, what happens to my child? I actually had two questions which I wanted to kind of put together. So one woman asked, who would replace me in the family plan should I pass away so that my family still sees the child, which is a very interesting point. And another asked, my husband died and we have two children. How can I ensure that they go to the correct guardian if anything happens to me? And I think in this, I also would like you to address the issue of a father as the biological guardian.
So it's important for everyone to remember that if you nominate a guardian in terms of a will, it is only a wish. It is still required that a court appoints a legal guardian on behalf of a minor. You can approach the children's court for this application. Obviously, you'll have to get some legal advice with regards to the steps that you need to follow for this. What's important is that we have to remember that the parent that survives the one that has passed away is a natural guardian, and they automatically have guardianship. You don't need to apply for it. If you have a situation where you are concerned that in the situation we spoke about previously, that the father is an alcoholic or engages in certain behavior that you are not happy with, or you don't want your child to be around, you need to consider dealing with that during your lifetime. Mm-hmm. Because what will happen when you pass away is that natural guardianship is automatic. There's nothing that needs to be done, and the father has access to the child and rights to the child, and nobody else would. The actual guardianship application happens in a children's court in front of a judge. A social worker will be appointed, and there'll be a few considerations that happens before a legal guardian gets appointed. They look at things like why do they want to be appointed as the legal guardian? What's their financial capabilities? Is there criminal records, relationship with the child? So quite a few things, so it's important for the single moms to take this very, very seriously, In my case, if I was in the same position and I was a single mom, I'd probably say I'd want my mom to be my child's legal guardian, and I'll put that in the will. But when that appears in front of a judge, the judge is going to see that my mom's 72 years old and she doesn't have a stable financial income. And it's most likely that my wish is not going to be honored.
But in your scenario, if you wanted your child to go to your mother, but you had sufficient funds in testamentary trust to support your mother with the child, that would change the conversation again.
100%, okay. Because you'd have one tick box to say, okay, the child will be taken care of from a financial aspect. All the other tick boxes still need to happen. Okay. Because at the end of the day, the judge will make a decision that is right for the child and not for the guardian. Mm.
I think this is really important because I always assume that whatever you put in your will would be that person would be the guardian, but it still has to go through a court process,
100%.
Which is really interesting. Yeah. And I mean, this particular...
Just to add, just remember, a will deals with assets. Mm. Your child is not an asset. Taking care of your child is not an asset.
That's actually and let's remember that. That's a very good point. And I want to go back to that first question, which was, how can I know that my family still sees the child? So this could be a scenario where she knows the biological father will get guardianship and she wants to make sure her family still have access. Is that something that she can specify in her will and which the courts will take into consideration when giving the guardianship? I mean, how does she navigate that?
It's a difficult situation. Again, I mean, a will, that is just a wish in a will, you know. It'll be really great during her lifetime if she does have these conversations and make sure everybody in the family has this understanding that that needs to happen. Mm-hmm. But again, we must just be careful about ruling from the grave. Some things can become a little bit impossible, and therefore who's applying for guardianship is going to be very important. Mm. Have the conversations with your family. If it's your sister that you want to take up guardianship, have the conversation with her and say, this is how I'd like my child to be brought up if I'm not here one day.
You can have it in a letter of wishes. Again, it's just a letter of wishes, correct, but it does provide guidance.
100%. Yeah.
Mm. Earlier we spoke about life cover and the importance of having cover for making sure that you're covering the costs of winding up your estate. And I got a really great question around the costs of executorship. Mm. So one of the moms said, I've been a single mom for 3 years while still going through a divorce. I don't know where to go to get the best advice. I know that if you use a company, they want to be the executor and that takes money away from your estate. Working full-time makes it impossible to go and see someone regarding estate planning and wills. So this is obviously somebody who's now concerned. She wants to get a will in place. She's worried about costs. Who's going to be the executor? How do I even get time? Let's be honest. Sure. If you are a single working mother, you don't have time. Yeah. So maybe answer that for us.
Sure. So for me, it's four big things. When you're looking for an executor, your executor or someone to assist you with your will drafting process, firstly, it has to be convenient to you. It must be a company that can either come see you here at the studio, at home, in between doing a school drop, you know. It must be convenient to you. You must have the ability to either see face-to-face, get it done on the phone, do a virtual appointment. To me, those are important from a convenience point of view. And what we've seen is that people have put this off for many, many years because it just became inconvenient. Okay, so I would look for that. The second thing that I would look for is consultation. Yes, previously in a stationery shop, you could get a precedent and you can fill in a will and Bob's your uncle. I would strongly advise against that. You do want to sit with a professional executor. I mean, this is the most important document that you will draft in your lifetime. And it's very easy to innocently make a mistake like give a farm or bequeath a farm to two people or leave a firearm to a five-year-old child in trust. Some of those things are virtually impossible to do and some things are illegal to do, you know. So you do want to sit with someone who has experience in estate administration. Nothing stops you from appointing a co-executor. Remember, you've got freedom of testation. You can make those decisions. So you can appoint a professional trustee, a professional executor, but also someone you know, love, and trust as a co-executor and a co-trustee. The third thing that I would look for is integration of services. you don't want your family to be with one company for executorship, another company for trusteeship, and a third company to convey the property from your name into your beneficiary's name. So that's one of the things that I would look for. And lastly, like you said, do I have enough funds? It's all of these fees that I need to take care of. Yes, one thing is having life cover, but also look at things like indemnification of fees, whereby you can use a policy to settle the death-related legal expenses, while the life cover and education benefits are used exactly for that.
Because I think we forget that. We think, oh, I've got enough life cover for my child's education, forgetting the winding up costs. So you can actually take out a separate insurance just to wind up the estate. Yeah. So one of the other comments that I often get is people saying, well, how much do I have to pay to have a will drawn up? Mm. Now, what I find is that many companies will draw up, a professional executor will draw up a will for you, but then they are the executor. So how does that, if you say, well, I want a family member to be the executor, how does that work normally?
Sure. Okay, so let's deal with the two things. Firstly is the cost for drafting a will. You shouldn't be charged for drafting a will. Every South African should have a will done if you're above 16 years old. Okay, so the cost should be free. Generally, wills are done or pushed quite hard during Wills Week, which the attorneys offer free wills, or Wills Month, which we see in the industry. But we do it all year round, obviously. Wills should not cost you anything. It's one thing drafting your will, still signing it and getting into safe custody is still really important. And we'll make sure that all of that happens irrespective of whether you've got a policy with us or you don't. Mm.
So say, for example, you want to appoint your spouse as executor or your family, single mom. So a trusted family member, your brother is somebody you really trust. You want to make them executor, but you want to make sure that your will is constructed correctly. I mean, there you probably would pay a professional service. Maybe you would see a lawyer who would give you advice and there would be a fee attached. I mean, would that be, I have seen those sort of structures as well.
It is very common, but at the end of the day, it's your will and you've got freedom of testation. You should be able to choose who you want to be the executor of the estate. However, having your brother as the executor in the estate, your brother may not be a professional executor and he may not have the training that's required of a professional executor. If you took your brother as executor, there's lots of legal obligations on him to fulfill in terms of administration of your estate. That's why you require actually a professional executor to support him in the administration. So he can take up executorship and his name can be on the letter of executorship. But I highly recommend that a professional executor supports him by a power of attorney and takes him through the full process. And he'll obviously have an eye on the full process as well.
So Denisha, just to end off, I want to clarify what makes a will valid. Mm-hmm. Because I think we've been talking a lot about going and having a will drafted and all these things. But actually, at the end of the day, I could sit down here right now and I could write my will and I could sign it and get two witnesses and it's valid.
Yeah.
And I know for many people who may be feeling intimidated, there was a woman who said, I never get time to do it. No will's really bad. So yes, a properly constructed, properly thought out will's the first prize, but kind of like if you're sitting there now thinking, I've got nothing, I need to do something quickly, what makes a will valid?
Yeah. So the first thing is that it has to be signed in wet ink. So we are a few years behind any electronic signatures, and I don't see that changing anytime soon. So print it, or if you've written it out, cool, just make sure it's signed in wet ink. You want to make sure that your two witnesses are present at the time of your signing. Your two witnesses have to be independent. Independent means they are not beneficiaries in your will, nor are their spouses.
So So the spouse of a beneficiary cannot be a witness.
Correct.
Yes, you see, I only learned that recently.
Correct.
I must tell you.
Okay, and they have to be present at the time of your signing. So they have to physically witness your signature onto that piece of paper.
And you don't have to go and get it stamped by the police or anything like that. You've just simply written it. You've got two witnesses. You need to let someone know it exists, I suppose, in a drawer somewhere. And that is sufficient.
Yeah. The only little nuance in your example is that if you go physically write it out, you would need a Commissioner of Oaths certificate attached to the will. So it's a little bit difficult. So let's stick with a printer and a computer.
Oh, really?
And let's get it typed out.
Oh, that is, I didn't know that.
Any handwriting will require a commissioner's
certificate. Okay, so if it's handwritten will, it does require a commission of oaths.
Correct.
If it's typed out and wet inked signed,
you're good.
Why?
Because the master cannot accept that will because they cannot confirm who actually wrote out the will. It could be somebody else, it could be influence. There's a number of issues.
Okay.
With regards to
handwriting. I just would have thought handwriting analysis would have solved that problem. But Denisha, this has been absolutely fascinating. I can't wait to share this with my audience and all those women who've been like waiting for me to get back to them with all these questions. And I think for me, it really shows the importance of thinking about this stuff. And I mean, at the end of the day, we're most likely actually going to live until our children are adults, right? That's what we all hope for. But we do sleep better at night as moms, knowing that, you know, we've got something in place and we know what's going to happen to our children. And I just want to actually end off with a little anecdote, Denisha, that my son was all of 6 years old when he said to me, "Mom, what happens to me if you die?" Ooh. And I think you need to be able to answer that question as a mom. So, yeah, go off and get that will signed.